Moncrief on News Talk.
If AI can figure out human languages, could it also divine how animals communicate? Could we one day have an app on our phones, for instance, to find out what Fido is feeling? There's already a race to develop one. Professor David Farrier from the University of Edinburgh is the author of Nature's Genius, Evolution's Lessons for a Changing Planet. Good afternoon, David.
Hi, Sean.
Tell us about, there is a prize being offered for this.
Yeah, so a foundation called the Jeremy Collar Foundation have put up a couple of prizes, actually, under the heading of the Collar Doolittle Prize, kind of appropriately. Mm. One is like an annual prize of $10,000, I think it is, for the most significant advance in trying to achieve, a kind of interspecies translation machine. But you know, for the research team that successfully manages this, there's a $10 million prize waiting at the end of them. So, and this race is really heating up, I think, very much as you say, because AI is you know, has so many, just a vast range of applications.
Yeah. Now, I assume, you know, just an app that could translate all animal languages, if such things exist in all species of animals, it'd be probably more profitable in the kind of scientific sense to kind of concentrate on some of the species of animals that seem to have something like a language.
Yeah, so there's research happening in all kinds of different parts of the animal kingdom, but a lot of it is focused on cetaceans. It's focused on whales and dolphins, particularly humpback whales, sperm whales, who seem to communicate with sounds that have laws, that have rules, just like our language has rules. And AI is useful there because, just like large language models, have kind of learned to understand human language by starting at the most basic level and working out how the simplest sounds get put together into words and they get put together into phrases and so on. It can take recordings of sperm whale codas or humpback whale song and look for the underlying rules, the structure, the hierarchy as well.
Mm. Now, but at the same time, like when AI is trained for human speech, there are human trainers that are required to say specific things. I suppose if you're trying to figure out what the cetacean is saying, you don't have that advantage.
No, it's very much a case of dropping a microphone into the water and recording what they happen to be saying to each other and then running vast amounts of data through these AI systems and seeing what comes out the other end. And of course, it throws up the whole question of, is this language? Is it music? Because it sounds beautiful. It's a song-like quality to a lot of these forms of communication. And the other thing, of course, is that when we are speaking, there's whole layers of nuance and context. To what extent can we catch hold of that when I think we're very aware that AI is less good understanding the nuance of human interaction. It doesn't understand what it's like to be human. So can we really understand what it's like to be a whale, even if we can sort of decode some of what they say to each other?
Mm, because I suppose if you're feeding whale speech, for want of a better phrase, into AI, you're going to have to tell it where it took place, what the whales were doing at the time, how many there were, all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. And there are whole other kind of layers of meaning that aren't just to do with the sounds they're making. I mean, all animals have a unique way of perceiving the world that is based on their biology, whether it's a sense of smell that's strongest or vision or sound or even something quite radically different, like kind of heat sensitivity or chemical cues. And all of this feeds into how the animal's communicating its sense of what it is to be a whale, for example. So we don't have echolocation, which is, something that's a fundamental to how dolphins understand their environment, understand the world they're in, and how they communicate with each other as well. I think the problem here is if we can't understand how the animal sees the world, then we'll really only understand what they're saying to each other, as well as AI understands what it is to be human.
Hmm. But I assume there must be things that are known already that can be used as a starting point. For instance, do whales see themselves as individuals or part of a group or both?
I mean, I think, I mean, we're going on what the evidence tells us. I think there's a compelling case to be said, though, that, you know, particularly with sperm whales, for example, they do have a strong sense of individuality, because the most remarkable things that these studies have revealed is that sperm whales have names for one another and they have dialects as well. So there are lots of suggestions, quite strong suggestions, that there's both a keen sense of the animal as an individual and as a member of a group.
Ah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Do we know anything about their sense of time? Do they, you know, can they come to grips with tomorrow? And well, they probably, they don't go to bed or anything, but you know what I mean? Like something might happen in the future or something happened in the past.
Well, they will, of course, yes, they will have a sense of time, but it'll be radically different to ours. So, for example, a sperm whale can communicate with another sperm whale, or a humpback whale with another humpback whale, over a vast distance, you know, a kilometre or more of ocean. And so your sense of space and your sense of time, obviously, is in a large way determined by, you know, your sense of here and now, isn't it? You know, we can't communicate over that distance. And so I think, yeah, they have... I suspect, and of course we don't know this because none of us have inhabited, you know, the mind of a whale. I suspect they have a much more expansive sense of time than we do, almost like a kind of oceanic sense of time, you know, a sense of time that's as grand as the environments they swim through.
You'd wonder what might they, you know, even if we reached the possibility, you know, the point where we were able to speak, to certain animals, would they want to speak to us?
Well, quite. I mean, this is one of the more troubling sides of it. I mean, the first thing to say there is that, very sadly, just as we're, you know, getting closer and closer to understanding what these animals are saying to each other, never mind what they might want to say to us, we're polluting the ocean soundscape. And this has particular bearing on, for example, humpback whale communication, because their calls occupy the same low frequency area of bandwidth as commercial shipping, or the noise of shipping of engines, and, you know, the sound of the disturbance of the water, and particularly deep sea mining. You know, we are increasingly looking to mine the sea floor for these rare earths that are found, that they're called polymetallic nodules, really, really valuable minerals that are essential for our telecommunications industries. And yet, because the noise of this industry is masking the sound that the whales make, it's forcing them either to change their calls so that they can sort of, you know, speak around, as it were, the noise of the mining or the shipping, or to go silent altogether. So there's a profound irony there, I think, that, you know, we're trying to drive our own desire to communicate and having such a devastating impact on what the animals can say to each other.
Yeah, all they might want to say to us is, please go away. David, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Professor David Farrier there from the University of Edinburgh.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.